Okay, good morning. It is Thursday morning, October 29th, 8 a.m. We're here for Chem 30A Lab. And we were just chatting here about the plan for today and what to do for today. We're a little bit ahead of where the rest of the class is, or at least Krista's sections. So Krista was still finishing up the activities from this week, and we've already completed those. So we're a little bit ahead of Krista in terms of lab material and what we had planned to do. And next week, we start module 7. So excuse me for looking away from the camera. My second monitor is over here. And actually, I can just drag this over here. And activity 7 starts gases, solids, gases, and liquids. And the biggest part of that is really the gas laws and what comes into activity 7. And so the one lab that we have scheduled for next week is called Boyle's Law. And it's an electronic lab where we would have been measuring pressures and volumes, and then relating them in a graph and plotting them in a graph and developing what's called Boyle's Law relationship. And it looks like it's an easy enough lab, a good lab to do. However, I generally like to do a good introduction into gas laws before we do that. And so I think that maybe this time is a good time to sort of like introduce the gas laws and look at how we handle gases, how we deal with gases, and where the gas laws come from. And so let's do that and then see how quickly we can get through that and then jump into the gas laws. Okay, so gas laws. Within gas laws, there are three main equations that we wind up doing. There is the ideal gas law. There is the combined gas law. And then there's Dalton's law of partial pressures. And these three the combined gas law allows us to derive a number of different relationships. So within these relationships, we have Boyle's law. We have Dalton, Avogadro's law and Charles's law. And I think the last one is Avogadro's. I think there's three main relationships. These three main relationships are derived and fall out of what is called the combined gas law. And so if you were to ask me what Boyle's law is, or Charles's law, or Avogadro's law, I couldn't tell you, which is kind of funny, but I tend not to memorize them in that way. And I tend not to use them in that way. I tend to remember the combined gas law. And when I need these relationships of Boyle's law, Charles's law, and Avogadro's law, I simply derive them. I let them naturally fall out of the combined gas law. And so I've never been a big fan of memorizing things by name in terms of the scientists who discovered them, or the scientists who they're named after, because Avogadro's law was not discovered by Avogadro, but was named after Avogadro. And so while these are very famous chemists and very important historically, and many of the reactions and relationships which are named after famous chemists are duly named and should be named after those famous chemists. It's just not the way that my brain works in terms of memorizing them. I tend to work from first principles. And so the way that I teach it is I tend to teach it from first principles. And so we go through, and I like to develop the relationships of the ideal gas law first and show where they come from, use them to develop the combined gas law. And then we take a look at Dalton's law and derive Dalton's law and where that comes from. And then show how all these relationships work and how we can apply them to many different problem types. So that's what I'd like to do, is I'd like to start with the ideal gas law and look at some things that that gases do that are sort of intuitive, but maybe go to a deeper understanding of why those gases do that, develop those relationships, and then show how we can actually derive the gas law, because it gives you a deeper understanding rather than just this is a formula, understand the formula and how to use it. Let's understand a little bit of where that formula comes from. So let's take a look at the ideal gas law. And where that comes from. The ideal gas law, as it says, is an ideal law. It's not real. It makes some assumptions in terms of gases. So we should understand this is ideal and an approximation to the way the gases really function. And within it, the approximations that we make are things like gas particles travel in a straight line. They are unaffected by gravity. They trade energy when they collide with other molecules, with the walls of whatever container they're in, with other gas particles. So energy is traded in collisions. Energy and direction. Traded in collisions. Probably the single most important word, collisions, because that's what governs how gases actually function, is when they collide, they trade energy and direction. Another idea here is that for an ideal gas, the size of the gas particle doesn't matter. Size of the gas particle doesn't matter. That we treat them as a point mass. A point mass being that it has no volume, only mass. Which of course is not true. Gas particles are all different sizes. But the size is not as important as the mass of the particle. And the other idea here is in terms of temperature, going back to the kinetic molecular theory, that the hotter something is, the faster it's moving. And then just a couple of other little things in terms of gases, that in general, gases are moving very fast. Let's do a couple of things about gases here. That when we look at a solid, it's the first thing to think about, when we look at a solid and a liquid, we call these condensed matter. The solid is about, 95% particles. And maybe 5 to 10% empty space. So 90 to 95% particles. And let's say 5 to 10% empty space. So when we say that, we mean that when we look at the particles and the distance between the particles, we have the volume that the particle takes up. And then in between, there's nothing. There's empty space. In a liquid, that is somewhere closer to 80 to 85% particles. And somewhere around 20 to 25%, or 20 to 15%. Let's do it this way, 15 to 20%. Empty space. But when we get to a gas, we have the particles of a gas that are sort of zooming around. A gas is only 0.1% particles. And that means that it's 99.9% empty space. Which is a rather difficult concept to wrap your brain around, because in the room in which you're sitting right now, that you exist within a gas, and you look around that room, that 99.9% of the room that you're sitting in is empty space, zero particles. Only 0.1% of that room actually contains gas particles. So gases are extremely, extremely diffuse. Gases are mostly empty space and very few particles. And so when we say here that size doesn't matter, that we treat them as a point mass, it's because the particles themselves occupy so little space that different size particles still occupy almost no space. And so the size of the particle really, really doesn't matter. Gases are traveling very fast though. So when we look at a gas, an oxygen, O2, at room temperature, about 25 degrees Celsius, is traveling somewhere on the order of about 500 miles per hour. And so they're just moving incredibly fast, but they're so small that they have very little momentum. And so they're just very, very tiny. The other thing is that if we look at a particle and we treat this particle as its diameter of the particle itself. So we're looking at how big that particle is across its diameter. On average, particles will travel about 10 times their diameter before they hit another particle and collide with something. So let's put another particle zooming in here and sort of say a collision. So they move about 10 times the diameter between collisions. So between how fast they're moving and the distance in which they collide, there are many, many collisions that we are looking at, that the gas particles are constantly colliding with each other and colliding with walls and colliding with other things, and energy is traded in that process. So when we have a particle that is moving very fast and a particle which is moving slowly, we'll use the size of the arrows to represent speed. Another way that we can represent speed is by representing it with temperature. So let's say that this particle is hot and moving fast, and this particle is slow. When they collide, what winds up happening is, and we'll call this one A and B so that we can recognize them. Once they collide and they hit here, there's a transfer of energy in the collision. And what winds up happening is A winds up losing energy and comes off slowly. And B winds up picking up energy and winds up moving faster. And so energy and direction have been traded in the collision. And it's much like playing pool in the way in which they work. So this one slows down. And this one speeds up. And by slowing down, what we mean is this one gets colder. And this one gets hotter. Energy is traded in collisions. Okay, so all of those things, all of those ideas are what we put into the ideal gas law. Now, our job is to actually develop that ideal gas law. And gases have certain properties. So the properties of gases. Properties of gases are that they occupy a volume. Usually we measure that volume in terms of liters. They have a temperature. We measure that temperature in degrees Celsius or in Kelvin. And they have a pressure. The pressure is usually measured in atmospheres. And atmospheres are abbreviated ATM. But they can be measured in something called millimeters of mercury or in torr. So there are several different types of pressure that we can measure. And then we measure the amount, which is measured in moles. So we have all of these different units that we need to keep track of. And all of these are interrelated. So the question is, how do we tease out what the relationship is? And also, we need to do a little bit of work because we understand volume, we understand liters. We understand the temperature. We understand degrees Celsius and Kelvin. Atmospheres are new to us, and millimeters of mercury and torr are new to us. Moles is not. Moles we understand. So it's really units of pressure that we haven't had to deal with yet. So let's take a second to understand those units of pressure before we proceed, and then we can use those to develop our actual relationships that we want to do. So the units of pressure, where does pressure come from? Well, pressure, when we think about it, if we're looking at something sort of at sea level down here, so we have water and somebody who is standing out at sea level and somebody who is standing up in the mountains, and we look at pressure, what pressure actually is, it is the force exerted per unit area. So force per unit area is how we say it. Sometimes that force per unit area is measured in pounds per square inch. So we could see here LBS per square inch. That is one of the ways in which we measure pressure. And when we measure pressure that way, that pressure is coming from a column of the atmosphere. And if we look at a column of the atmosphere and we think about 1 square inch, so something that is 1 inch by 1 inch by 1 inch, and then we take that 1 inch and we extend it from the highest reaches of the atmosphere all the way down to the bottom down here, and this is 1 inch by 1 inch, and this is the top of the atmosphere. And this down here is sea level. So we've got essentially the ocean down here as the land moves away. We've got our little fish. In all of that mass that is in all of the air molecules, down here at the bottom, we measure a pressure which is 14.7 pounds per square inch. That means that almost 15 pounds is pushing on you on every square inch of your body, just from the force of the atmosphere and the gravity pulling that atmosphere down onto you. And when you go up into the mountains and we look at the column at one square inch and the column of gas that is sitting on top of you up in the mountains, the pressure is less. Because the column of gas is not as tall. And so pressure is related to your position and location in the environment. And the pressure changes, we know, with weather conditions. So depending upon what the weather is doing, and we listen to the weather and we hear about high pressure systems and low pressure systems that wind up coming through, that as the atmosphere changes and the amount of material that is sitting above us changes, the pressure actually changes. And so when they measure that pressure, they use a device called a barometer. And traditionally, what they used to use was a mercury barometer. And this gets us into some of the other units of pressure. So how do we measure units of pressure? Well, a mercury barometer was a device that had an open tube and it sat inside a pool of mercury. And this was liquid mercury. So we'll use gray here as the metal. And what they did is they filled this tube up with mercury as they inverted the tube. And mercury being so dense, it's extremely dense, 27 something grams per milliliter. So this is liquid mercury. And that mercury is so dense that gravity pulls it down. And as gravity pulls it down, what is inside here is a vacuum. A vacuum meaning no gas particles. Not entirely true because there's some mercury gas particles that are in there, but for the purposes of this, we'll say no gas particles. And the mercury can't fall all the way out of the tube because it's inverted into this liquid. And because that vacuum builds, that vacuum is essentially countering the amount of pressure that is being generated by the tube of mercury pushing down into here. And there are a couple of competing forces. So one of the things that we have that is pushing on this outside pool is the pressure of the atmosphere. And that pressure that is pushing on it is equal to the pressure that is the height in mercury that is measured in actual millimeters of mercury. And that's the barometric pressure. The barometric pressure is measured in the height of that column in the actual millimeters of mercury. So mmHg equals millimeters. And we just take and we measure it with a ruler. And as the atmosphere pushes down harder, the millimeters go up. And as the atmosphere releases, and as this goes down, then the millimeters go down. And what we have defined is that 760 millimeters of mercury is equal to one atmosphere, which is equal to the pressure at sea level. And so while, yes, that pressure at sea level generally changes, we have a definition that the pressure at sea level is generally close to one atmosphere, generally close to that 14.7 pounds per square inch. And that's equal to 760 millimeters of mercury. So that's where our definition comes from. And when you see them report the barometric pressure and you listen to the news, you never hear numbers as high as 760. You hear numbers that are around 29, 30, 31. Well, what are those? Those measurements, when they report in the United States, and they report the barometric pressure, they report it in units of inches of mercury. And so if you take 760 millimeters of mercury and we convert it, and we want to convert it into inches of mercury, just to understand barometric pressure and how that works, we're just converting millimeters into inches. And so we could say that for every 10 millimeters, it equals 1 centimeter. And for every 2.54 centimeters, it equals 1 inch. Then 1 atmosphere, 760 divided by 10 divided by 2.54 equals 29.9. So this is 29.9 inches of mercury. And that's why our barometric pressure readings are generally around 30 when they're reporting it on the weather, because they're doing it in inches of mercury, even though they're not telling you what the units are. We don't use inches of mercury within chemistry. Our units are millimeters of mercury, atmospheres, and torr. So we have this 760 millimeters of mercury is equal to 1 atmosphere. Torr is another unit of measure. And historically, I can't remember where torr comes from, but 760 torr is also equal to 1 atmosphere. And so 1 millimeter of mercury is equal to 1 torr. They are essentially the same unit and can be used interchangeably. And so when you're given torr, you can convert them into millimeters of mercury. And now you know how to convert them into atmospheres as well, that 760 millimeters of mercury equals 1 atmosphere. And this is an exact conversion factor. It's a definition. Okay, so now we have an understanding of pressure as well. Now what we need to do is we need to develop a relationship that allows us to be able to look at pressure, volume, temperature, and the number of moles. And then we can start to develop our relationships. So the relationships that we want to look at, we're going to use a chamber. We want sort of an oval chamber here. This chamber is going to have some controls in it that are going to allow us to be able to track some different properties. I want to copy this. Copy it again. And what we have here is a little piston. So we'll make this a solid disc, essentially. This disc is going to sit inside here, and let's color in the inside of this disc, since this is a solid sort of piece that's going to fit in here. So this is a moving piston that allows us to be able to change volumes. And we're going to put a locking pin in it so that we can lock it. And that's going to allow us to be able to control the volume as that piston moves up and down. We have control over the volume. We'll have a little port on the side here with a valve in it. And that port can be hooked to a gas tank. We'll call it a valve. And it allows us to be able to move gas in and out, so I can control the number of moles of gas that's inside of this. We're going to put a couple of other little controls. I'm going to move the volume over to the other side. We're going to put a temperature gauge. And We're going to put a pressure gauge. So that we can measure temperature and we can measure pressure. And then we'll also have like a Bunsen burner down here that will be able to allow us to add in some heat if we wanted to add in heat. Or we could put ice on it if we want to cool it down. So we can control the temperature, we can control the volume, we can measure the pressure, we can control the moles of gas, all of those things we can control. Now the idea here is we're going to investigate the relationship between two properties and we're going to hold the other two constant. So this is going to be an investigation into gas properties. Relationships. We're going to look at two properties. While we hold the other two constant. That's important. If we get too many things changing while we go through and do this, we won't be able to understand the relationships that we're looking at. So we're going to hold two properties constant by locking them down in some way. We'll talk about how we lock them down. And then we're going to measure the system, change the system, measure it again, see what winds up happening. And these are fairly intuitive. So these aren't overly complicated in the way that we go through and look at them. So let's take our apparatus. We'll take our whole thing. We'll copy it. And the first thing that we'll look at is Boyle's law. And the only way that, or the only reason that I'm saying this is because Boyle's law is that is what we're doing next week. And so in this Boyle's law relationship, we are going to investigate pressure and volume and we're going to hold temp and moles constant. Okay, so what are we going to do? What we're going to do is we'll get rid of some of our words here. We'll get rid of our valve and our moles of gas. We're not going to need the heat right now. So we'll get rid of that. And we are going to unlock the piston. We're going to take this device. We're going to put some gas into it. So here's our gas, and we'll measure the temperature and the pressure. So this is the system initial. So this is our starting point. And then what we're going to do to this system is we're going to decrease the volume. In decreasing the volume, we are going to push on the piston like a bicycle pump. So the piston is going to get pushed down. And as the piston gets pushed down, all the gas particles get pushed into a smaller volume. So I need to get them out of the way for a second, because what we're going to do is we're going to take this guy and we're going to push it all the way down. And so now we have the same number of gas particles because the valve was locked, but they're in a smaller volume. And when we push this, we pushed slowly, allowing the temperature to not change. And so this was pushed very slow. That's how we manage to control the temperature. And this is our ending. And what we want to do is we want to know what happened. Temperature was held constant, so temperature didn't change, but what happened to the pressure? Well, we need to understand what pressure actually is. So let's understand what pressure actually is. If we take a section of the wall over here and we look at the area on the wall, as these particles come and collide with the wall, each collision results in a small force applied over a pressure. And so pressure really is force per unit area. And we can equate that to collisions per area per time. How many collisions happen in a given amount of time in a given area? That equals the pressure. Well, if we take that same area and we now apply that area over here, there's many more particles. And because there's many more particles, there's more collisions. More collisions for the same amount of area and more collisions in the same amount of time. So what happens here if we have more collisions per area and more collisions per time, what happens to the pressure? This means that there's more pressure. The pressure went up. That's what that means. And so the relationship that we're observing here is that when the volume goes down, when volume decreases, pressure goes up. So this is the result, the resulting relationship. The result is that as volume goes down, pressure goes up. This is what is called inversely proportional. And the way that we write it is we write it volume. Let's write it with the pressure on the left-hand side. Pressure is proportional to 1 over the volume. This is a relationship that is called inversely proportional. And so as pressure goes up, volume goes down. Or if the volume were to go up, the pressure would go down. And what we're going to do is we're going to take these relationships that we develop. We're going to combine them all into one giant equation. But first, we need to investigate each one of these. So we have investigated pressure and volume. And based on our change in our device here, we now understand sort of the pressure and volume relationship. Let's take this device and let's look at pressure and temperature. And what we will do is we will hold the volume and moles constant. So here's our device. In this case now, we're going to put the locking pin back in. So we'll lock it back up. So we're not going to allow the volume to change. What we are going to do, I guess what I should have done here is I should have indicated that our needle sort of increased, went up. So pressure went up. Okay, so back down on this one, pressure versus temperature. What we're going to do is we're going to lock the pin, close the valve, and we're going to investigate temperature and pressure. And so to do that, we're going to bring that Bunsen burner back in and we're going to add some heat. And we're going to think about what happens as we add heat into this system. As we add temperature, the temperature is naturally going to go up. But what happens to the particles? We need to think through what an increase in temperature actually means. There we go. So we're adding heat. What this means is that the particles that were initially moving slowly, so we can say that all of these guys are sort of slowly moving in their different directions. And the speed, remember, is relative to collisions per unit time. So once again, pressure equals collisions over an area in a given time. And so if we look at that sort of area that was there, we have few collisions in a given amount of time because the particles are moving slowly. That's then few collisions per unit time, low pressure. Then what we do is we heat them up. So now the particles are all starting to move faster. And as they move faster, they're colliding more frequently and with greater force. So the force of each collision is increasing. And so if we take a look at our area, then the number of collisions that are happening within our area are both greater in number and also with more force. So the number of collisions increase, in time, and each collision has more force because the particle is simply moving faster. And that equals an increase in pressure. So what we're seeing is that when the temperature comes up, and as the temperature comes up and this thing gets hotter and the pressure comes up and the pressure goes up, they're both going up at the same time. As they both go up at the same time, the way that we write that is we say here, pressure is going up, temperature is going up. This is the result. This is what's called directly proportional. And we say that pressure is proportional to temperature. This symbol, I didn't define it earlier. This means proportional too. It's not an equality. It just means they trend the same. And so what we say then, these are directly proportional. As one goes up, the other goes up. All right, so temperature and pressure are directly proportional. We have one more to investigate. Let's investigate pressure and moles. Pressure versus moles. And we'll hold temp. And we'll hold volume constant. Okay, we need our device. We won't need the heat, but what we will need is we will need like a little gas tank. And what we're going to do with this gas tank, we have a little valve on the top. We connect the tube with a tube And maybe we have a little valve here that we open up that we can put gas into this. And so what we're going to do is we're going to add gas. I'm going to add moles. And as we add moles, we're going to add those moles fairly slowly so that we don't affect the temperature. And we're going to keep the piston locked so that we don't change the volume. So the volume is held constant too. And as we add moles, we simply get more moles of gas inside here. They're moving all at the same speed in general. We haven't increased the temperature. We've just added a lot more of them. This is like putting more air in your tire. And as you put more air in your tire, the pressure generally goes up. But why does the pressure go up? Well, it's the same thing that we've been talking about. If we look at the area and the area over here, and we look at how many collisions, we have a few collisions per unit area because there's less particles. So less particles. Less collisions per time. Over here, we have more particles, and that is more collisions per time. And that equals more pressure. So gases, when you think of it in this way, become pretty intuitive, that there's no real mystery here in terms of the way that these gas particles are relating. And we can just do simple thought experiments to think about how these gases actually work. And so what we're finding here is that pressure, the result of this one, is that when the number of moles go up, pressure goes up. And so we say that these two, pressure is directly proportional to the number of moles. And this is a directly proportional. All right, so now we have all of these relationships and we've got to take all these relationships and put them together. So here's what we do. We take pressure inversely proportional to volume. We take pressure directly proportional to temperature. Pressure directly proportional to the number of moles. And moles, we're going to use N as a symbol for moles because everything else has a single letter symbol for them, and moles is no different. We have a single symbol that we use for moles, but we only use that symbol N when we're doing gas laws. We don't use N for moles in any other facet of chemistry. We only use N when we're doing gas laws. And so we take these and we combine these relationships, and we say that pressure is proportional to temperature times moles over volume. And so this is a single relationship or combined relationship. This way we should say this. Or proportionality. However, it's not an equality. In order to get it into an equality, what we'd really like to see is we'd like to see an equal sign. So we would like this, in order to do calculations, would like an equality, an equal sign. And the way that we get inequality is to use a proportionality constant. And a proportionality constant takes a proportionality, a relationship like this, and converts it into an equality. And the way that we find that is we take these and we graph them together. And so we look at a relationship that is pressure is equal to some proportionality constant times T times N over V. And this thing here is what we call a proportionality constant. And it comes out of mathematics of a straight line, Y equals MX plus B. Straight line formula, where M in that formula, this M is the slope of the line. And so if we take these two equations and we say, all right, here's P. P is going to be Y. We take the proportionality constant. That looks like my slope. We take T, N over V. That looks like X. And then B, we don't know what B is going to be yet, but if we were doing a straight line formula, and if the temperature went to zero or the number of moles went to zero, there would be no pressure. And so we would expect that if these things here went to zero, pressure would go to zero. And so B here actually is zero. So we don't need to worry about B because B is going to turn out to be zero in this. And so what we do is we take and we plot all of these things on a graph for many different systems and for many different combinations of pressure and temperature and volume. And what we wind up doing is taking and plotting pressure on the y-axis. So our pressure goes on the y-axis. Our Tn over V, this winds up going onto the x-axis because that's what was x. I'm going to make it so that we can see everything here on the same time. So that was my x value. And I said that we plot this many, many data points. And so what we get is we get just a ton of data points for different gases and different conditions, different pressures, different temperatures. And that may be one gas. And then we do it again for a different gas. And so maybe we do it for this gas. We use oxygen for one, we use nitrogen for another. Maybe we go and we do this with chlorine gas. And so we choose another gas yet. And when we take all these materials, let's do little triangles, and we measure them all at all these different systems, what we find is that we get a straight line relationship. Starting from zero out to here, we get a straight line relationship, which is what we expected or what we were hoping we were going to see when we thought of this as being a straight line. And the slope of this line is the proportionality constant. And it equals 0.08 21 liter atmospheres over moles Kelvin is the units that we apply to it. And that's the slope of that. And that slope, because it works for all gases and it relates pressure and to temperature, the number of moles and the volume, we call this the universal gas constant. And that universal gas constant, we give it a variable, we give it a name. And so what we say is we say that R is the variable that we use assigned to that slope. And so R equals 0.0821 liter atmospheres over moles Kelvin. And that then takes our equation into P equals R times TN over V. And this then is the formula of our straight line. So our formula for our straight line, we had P, we had the gas constant, and we had the, I think I did these in blue, TN over V, and this was Y equals MX plus B, where B was zero. So these all align in the formula of a straight line. And I just wanted you to see kind of how that formula of that straight line comes about, where it comes from, and how it is the formula of a straight line. And what we do is, this is now called the ideal gas law. And we reorganize it so that we take it and we just move volume to the left-hand side of the equation, just to make the equation a linear sort of equation. So we take P equals R, which is in the numerator, times T and N, all over V, and we multiply both sides by V. Let's change color to show that we're doing a derivation. So we multiply both sides by V just to move V to the other side of the equation. And we get an equation that we write this way. We write P V equals N R T. And this now is the form of the ideal gas law that we use. And the units are very specific. Pressure must be in atmospheres. Volume must be in liters. N must be in moles. And temperature must be in Kelvin. And the R value, R has four units associated with it. It is liters over, liter atmospheres over moles Kelvin. And that is our ideal gas law. Now the question is, how do we use that ideal gas law? All right, so what do we do with this ideal gas law now that we have it? Well, it relates all of these different variables. It relates four different variables. Given three of those variables, we can calculate the fourth. And that's how we use the ideal gas law. So now we could take a system and we can ask questions. Let's see how to use it. Let's say that we have a system, same system we've been using. And we have some of these variables that we have measured. We have measured the volume of this system to equal, let's say that it is a 2.5 liter system. And the number of moles that I have added into the system is, 3.6 moles of gas. And we'll say that it is nitrogen gas, N2. And the temperature is going to be 25 degrees Celsius. But we said the temperature needs to be in Kelvin. So we'll add 273 to that. And so we'll get out a temperature which is 298 Kelvin. So we've got our Kelvin. And then the pressure that we would measure is what we're asking for. So we have all of the different variables that go into this equation, and we take the equation and we write PV equals nRT. We solve the equation for pressure. So solving for pressure, I divide both sides by volume, and I come up with the pressure is equal to nRT over V. Then I substitute in my different variables. N is 3.6 moles. R is something you have to memorize. R is 0.0821 liter atmospheres over moles Kelvin. Temperature was 298 Kelvin. And the volume was 2.5 liters. Now what I'll do is I'll go through and I'll actually do that math and calculate out that number. And I'll track my units and watch my units. So that my units, moles, cancels moles in the denominator here. Liters cancels liters in the numerator. And Kelvin cancels Kelvin in the denominator of that. Notice that I have one unit of measure, atmospheres, and it's in the numerator. So pressure, which is what I'm trying to calculate, is measured in atmospheres. And I'm about to get atmospheres as a number. So let's take and let's calculate this out. 3.6 times 0.0821 times 298 divided by 2.5. I think I missed the decimal, 2.5. This equals 35.230752 atmospheres. And then of course, every time we do a calculation like this, we then do sig figs. These are all measured quantities. So these are two sig figs, three, two, and three for the 298. So my smallest number is two in two locations. I need to round my answer to two sig figs. My proper answer would be the pressure is equal to 35 atmospheres. And we've done our first problem using PV equals nRT. And so that's the way that we do PV equals nRT problems. We take all of the parts of the problem that they give us and we make a list. So here's PV equals nRT problem solving skills. How to solve PV equals nRT problems. Number one, parse the problem. And identify all variables and question. So we're going to make a list. That is pressure, volume, number of moles. You can put R in there and T and define out what they are. So that as we're parsing that problem, we're writing down, maybe they're asking us for what the pressure is. And they're giving us, in this problem here, I had 3.6 moles, 25 degrees Celsius. This one, R, you have to memorize 0.0821 liter atmospheres over moles Kelvin. I usually keep track of their units as well. And the volume was 2.5 liters. After we make a list and we do all of that, we do it with units. The next thing you need to do is convert any units not in the proper unit In other words, temperature must be in Kelvin. Volume must be in liters. N must be in moles. But frequently, temperature is often given. Let's make a list of what they're often given as. So these are required. Oh, and pressure is required to be in atmospheres. Often given as, which is a shame, temperature is often given in degrees Celsius. Volume is often given in milliliters. N is often given as a mass in grams of material, requiring the molar mass to convert it back into moles. Pressure is often given in millimeters of mercury, or torr, which is why we went through the conversion factors to be able to convert them back into atmospheres. And so we need to make any of these conversions to get them into the proper unit before we do anything else. So convert any units not in the proper unit. Then after you do that, rearrange the equation, solve for the unknown. Solve equation for unknown. Do this before you put any other values into the equation. For instance, PV equals nRT. Solve for V or solve for P. So what we do is we take and we want to move the volume to the other side. So we multiply 1/volume. Or you could think about it this way. I usually think about it multiplying 1/volume. You can divide both sides by volume. It's even an easier way to demonstrate it. And so I've solved it for P. P equals nRT over V. Now, after you've solved for the unknown, add in your numbers, calculate your answer. Sig figs and units, and you're done. So those are all our steps for how to solve a PV equals nRT problem. Parse the problem, define all your variables and question, make a list of them with their units so that we have them all. Put a question mark for the thing that you're being asked to find. Convert any units not in the proper unit. These units are required. They're required by how R was defined. R is defined as moles, liters, I can't even do it unless I actually go through and say the number. Liter atmospheres over mole Kelvin. There we go. So R is what determines what these values need to be. Convert any of the other things that are given to you into the proper units, then take and solve your equation for the unknown variable. Finally, add in the values, calculate the answer, assess the figs, and make sure you write the proper units on the answer that we have. That's how we go through and do that. All right, so we've done, well, let's maybe do one more real quick, and then I'll take you to the next step. So we've got a little bit more time. Let's say that what is the temperature of a 1.5 liter cylinder that contains 0.623 moles of nitrogen gas at a pressure of 723 millimeters of mercury. Okay, so we're going to make a list: pressure, moles, temperature, R, and volume. Pressure, 723 millimeters of mercury. Parsing our problem. Number of moles, 0.623 moles. Temperature, that appears to be our question. R needs to be memorized, 0.0821 liter atmospheres over moles Kelvin. Volume was given as 1.5 liters. The only thing that's not in the right units is the millimeters of mercury. That needs to be in atmospheres. And so I'll do that conversion right here, that for every 760 millimeters of mercury, it's one atmosphere. And I'll do that calculation before I do anything else. 723 divided by 760 should be a little less than one atmosphere. 0.95131578 atmospheres. And before I go any further, this was an exact conversion factor. I had 3 sig figs. I will maintain or keep 3 sig figs. So this is going to equal 0.951 atmospheres, and that's what I will use in my problem. Then I go through and I take the equation, PV equals nRT, and I am asked to solve for temperature. That's what I'm trying to solve for. So I need to move N and R to the other side of the equation. To derive that, what I will do is I will take and I will divide both sides by NR. That will move the number of moles and the R group to the other side of the equation, canceling them out from the right-hand side. And I will come up with an equation that says PV over NR is equal to T. Now I can take and I can put all of my variables into that. So I will say T is equal to the pressure, 0.951 atmospheres. Make sure you put the units in. And I like to use parentheses to separate each of my values when doing gas laws, times the volume, 1.5 liters, over N, number of moles, 0.623 moles, times R, 0.0821 liter atmospheres over moles Kelvin. Okay, now to enter this into the calculator, there's a couple of different ways you can do it. You can put it into the calculator as 0.951 times 1.5 divided by the quantity 0.623 times 0.0821 and hit the equal sign. That's one way to do it. The way that I like to do it is because I don't like to try to find the parentheses on my calculator. Trying to find parentheses just seems to slow me down. So I do it without parentheses. Totally valid way to do it. Divided by 0.623 divided by 0.0821. Anything in the denominator, hit divided by. Anything in the numerator, hit multiply by. And you can do it without parentheses. Less keystrokes, less chance of making an error. Both come out to be exactly the same. Let's grab the calculator and I'll show you what I mean. 0.951 times 1.5. then divided by the quantity, 0.623 times 0.0821, closed quantity, equals 27.889. That comes out to really cold. I was thinking that would come out a lot hotter than it is. Let me just check my values. And it looks like everything is correct. We'll check the other one and we'll see what comes out there too. 489. And we'll check our units and make sure that we're doing everything correctly. All right, let's check this other number and make sure this value comes out the same. 0.951 times 1.5 divided by 0.623 divided by 0.0821. And it comes out to be exactly the same. Okay, so sig figs and units. Sig figs were 3 for the atmosphere, 2 for the liters, 3 for the moles. R is a measured quantity, and R, to what we have memorized it, is 3 sig figs to what we have memorized it. And so it looks like the smallest number is 2. And so I would be rounding this. Both cases come out to the exact same value. I'm rounding it to 28, but I need to know the units. So let's check the units and make sure we know what the units are. Moles cancel, atmospheres cancel, liters cancel, and I've got Kelvin in the denominator. This is 1/1/Kelvin. That means that this is 1 × Kelvin/1, which equals just Kelvin. Dividing by a fraction is the same as multiplying by its reciprocal. So when I take and I multiply by the reciprocal of 1/Kelvin, I get Kelvin/1, and that is just Kelvin. So this is 28 Kelvin, which is a really small temperature. And I should have thought better in terms of the number of moles that I was putting into that, or maybe the pressure should have been much higher in terms of how big that cylinder was. That would be what we would report, and that would be the correct answer, okay? So we've done a couple of PV equals NRT problems. How does this get us into Boyle's Law? And we have just a couple of minutes just to show you how it gets into Boyle's Law, and then we can do Boyle's Law next week and use it. So here's the thing. Let's take PV equals NRT. And let's solve for R. Solve for the gas constant. When you solve for the gas constant, what we do is we take both sides and divide both sides by N/T. That gives us N and T move to the left-hand side. And we would say then that PV/NT is equal to R. Makes sense, right? But now R is a constant. R never changes. R is the same for every single gas. And because R is a constant and never changes, if I say that this is P1 and V1 and N1 and T1, and that's equal to R, then I could also say that P2, V2, N2, and T2 are also equal to R, not equal to R2. But equal to R, because R is the same no matter what. This is condition 1, and this is condition 2, meaning that they're changing conditions. These two changing conditions are both equal to the same thing. And if they are equal to the same thing, then they are equal to each other. So what comes out of this is that P1V1 over N1 T1 is equal to P2 V2 over N2 and T2 because they are both equal to the same thing. So basically what we're saying is that if X equals R and Y equals R, then X equals R equals Y, and we can just say that X equals Y. We can get rid of R. And that's what we've done here, is we've set them equal to each other because they were both equal to the same thing, both equal to R. This is called the combined gas law. And it's used for changing conditions. It comes out of PV equals NRT, and it's derived from PV equals NRT, and fairly easy to remember because all I have to do is solve for R and then set them equal to each other, and I'm done. Now, the great thing about this is that in changing conditions, anything that doesn't change, I can delete it because it will be the same on both sides. And so in Boyle's law is a law that relates pressure to volume. Oh, wait, is it pressure? Hang on 1 second. See, like I said, I don't always remember them. And I need to go back and I see that we're doing. Yeah, pressure and volume. So Boyle's law tells us about pressure and volume, but how does Boyle's law relate to pressure and volume? So what we do is we hold temperature and moles constant. So we go from P1 V1, the combined gas law, over N1 T1 equals P2 V2 over N2 and T2, and we're holding the temperature and moles constant. That means that the temperature T1 equals T2 and N1 equals N2. So if that is true and these guys are constant, and these are unchanging, then P1 over V1 over N1 T1 equals P2 V2 over N1 T1, because N2 and T2 equals that, then this is like dividing by one on both sides. Or I could take N1 T1 and multiply it by both sides. And as I multiply by both sides, it just goes away. So these guys here cancel each other out. And we end up with the relationship P1 V1 equals P2 V2, and this is Boyle's law. That relates the pressure to the volume for a system where the number of moles and the temperature are not changing. And the lab that we're going to do next week takes and looks at pressures and volumes and graphing them. And so we have a series. I was going to see if I could bring it in. Maybe what I can do is airdrop it in real quick. So here's the gas law, Boyle's law, pressure volume relationship. And in the lab, what we would have done is we would have used a syringe hooked to a pressure monitor that is hooked to a computer. And what we do is we push the syringe in, we change volumes, and we record pressures. And so the data was taken for us. We have a series of volumes. We have a series of pressures. And then what we do is we process that data and we put it on a graph and we graph it and we go through and we calculate out the constant, the pressure volume constant, pressure divided by volume, what the actual constant of that is. And we come up with a proportionality constant. And that's the relationship that we wind up going through and doing with that. But it all stems from this idea that P1 V1 is equal to P2 V2, and it comes out of Boyle's law from the combined gas law. All right, so what did we come out of this with? Let's just do a wrap up here real quick. What we did is we found that the ideal gas law, which is an approximation, a good, very good approximation of how gases behave, is equal to P V equals N R T, where R is a constant that equals 0.0821 and has units of liters, atmospheres per mole Kelvin. We also know that pressure must be in atmospheres, volume must be in liters, temperature must be in Kelvin, and N is a measure of moles. Other things that we found is 760 millimeters of mercury equals one atmosphere, as a conversion factor that we didn't previously have, that was an important conversion factor. And the other relationship that we've developed is the combined gas law. So the combined gas law says that P1 V1 over N1 T1 is equal to P2 V2 over N2 and T2. All right, so that's all of the net out of what we get out of today. And with that, you are pretty much all set to take on any of the gas law problems out of Krista's class. And we are set to be able to go through and do Boyle's law relationships next week and look at that lab, I think on Tuesday. We'll do that there. Okay, I think we've been going for the right amount of time. We're ending class right on time. Let's see how you guys are doing. If I can get back here. Maggie, it is still us. Let me ask if you have any questions about what we went through or how that all looked. And maybe what I'll do is it's time to stop the recording. So we're gonna cut it here. We'll get this up and posted. And then I'll go into Canvas and I'll make sure that the worksheet is all available in Canvas. I don't know that you have the full information to be able to do the worksheet yet. So I don't know that we need to tackle it early, but we'll do a little bit more work on that worksheet on Tuesday. And then you'll have enough information to be able to complete it next week. So you're a little bit ahead, and we've given you some good gas laws information here and showed you where everything comes from. So hopefully you guys will find that helpful. And remember, I've got office hours today from 10 o'clock, starting in a half hour, 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock. All right, y'all take care. Thanks for watching.